I think we'll launch right into our next presentation.
Sure, let me just...
Territory to cover.
Let me make sure the computer's still running.
Okay. We're happy to welcome Bob Trudeau this year. He's from Providence College, where he's taught since 1970. His area of specialization has been Latin American politics in general and Central America in particular. He's published a book on Guatemalan politics and several articles and chapters on that topic. More recently, he's focused on pedagogy and research into teaching issues. His first exposure to the Grateful Dead was when a former student of his showed up on his front doorstep in 1971 with Skull and Roses. And he said, "I think you're going to like this," which of course he was right. And
Bertha.
And so from Bertha on, Bob was hooked. His first show was Springfield, Mass., March 28th, 73. And he noticed something unusual, special going on. So to the second show, he brought some paper and pencil and started taking some notes, but then decided he would just observe, participate.
What?
And so he's been researching this for a long time.
When you're a scholar and a researcher, by inclination, you want to study things. And so I actually went to my second Grateful Dead concert with literally this, a pencil and a pad, so I could take notes on the unusual rock concert behavior I was observing, people sharing joints, people, you know, no one hassling anybody. The whole thing was very different from anything else I had seen. And
do you still have that first pencil?
I don't. I wrote a few things. They were illegible very quickly, and I decided really about the fourth song that it was stupid. I was missing the music. So, you know, I've thought about it, but I've not done much research for a long time. Well, let me start first. It's an honor to be here. Thank you very much. Thanks to Nick for letting me be on the panel. It's hard for me to imagine. I don't know if this was planned, but what just happened is such an interesting compliment to what I'm talking about that I hope you'll be able to remember everything that you just heard while you're listening to me for a couple of reasons. One is, most of what I've heard here in the past couple of days has been Stella Blue to my beer barrel polka that's coming down right now. So I'm having a little fun with this. I'm nowhere near the depth that other people have introduced into some of these panels. I need to start by defining the word metacantric, partly because a couple of you have already asked and partly because it's not a very common word. I chose the word partly to stimulate audience interest. And I think it has, because most of you don't know what it means. I didn't intend this, but it turns out that another reason for using this word is that if you Google it, you get my name really high on the list, because this the title, I've always wanted to be high in a Google list. And this is how I achieved it, unintentionally, but there you are. The third reason that I'm using this word is that I had never heard it before the Unbroken Chain Symposium, and I have a bunch of copies of the paper that I'm not going to read to you. I'm just going to talk about what's in it a little bit. If anybody wants one of these, feel free to grab them. But in it, there is no attribution of where I heard this word first at the Unbroken Chain Symposium. And in fact, I believe it was from Graham Boone, but I don't know for sure. I know he's on the program, but I don't know him. Did you use it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was you. Great. So if you email me for a copy of this, you'll get a revised version with his name in it, you know, appropriately thanked for the word. What happened at the conference is that when you use the word and we talked about it, I had such an aha moment about things I had been thinking about for 15 or 20 years that I forgot to write anything down. The same thing that happened in my second Grateful Dead concert, as it turned out. And so I'm sort of recovering from that now. The word simply means, and Graham, you can correct me if I'm misstating it. I'm sorry, what?
Rev car.
It was from you that the word came, not Graham Boone.
Unless Graham used it also. I wasn't into all of Graham's paper, but I definitely used it.
We'll talk. Okay. I need to get the right footnote.
Okay.
Nick and I are obsessive about this stuff.
Yeah.
It simply means lyrics that are being performed by a musician who is, in fact, doing what the lyrics are saying.
Yeah, that was
So if you're a folk singer sailing down the barge, sailing on down the canal on a barge, and you're singing, I'm a folk singer sailing down a canal in a barge, that's metacantric.
Okay, could you say the definition again? Lyrics that are...
Lyrics in which the words are, in fact, the performer is doing what the words are saying, playing in the band.
Like when everybody's doing the hand jive.
When you say, and it's not that it's not the title of the song. It's the line in which you're turning while I'm playing in the band. So he's playing it while he's singing it. If you want to reflect for a minute, there are lots of these. There are lots of. Maybe one more day I find myself alive. You know, there's all sorts of metacantric things in the Grateful Dead.
Just to interrupt, I played a recording on KBFA Marathon the other day in which Phil introduces the song by saying, now we're going to play a song that's about playing a song that's about playing a song.
Yeah.
What they play? Playing in the band.
Yeah. Okay. It's an audience participation paper, but that's okay.
They're used to that at this point.
That's fine with me. So that's what the word means, and I should tell you before I get into much of the substance of this that I'm really not talking about the lyrics of the song. And so using the word metacantric is only my way into it. And I put super in front of it, not because this is very good, because I'm trying to think of another level of metacantric. And meta-metacantric didn't seem to work, but if you can come up with a better word, if you're in the paper, I've got a footnote requesting that you send me better words for this. But what I'm really focusing on is the structure of the song, and particularly the performance structure of the song, the way they actually played it in concert. Not particularly in terms of the musical stuff, though I'll do a little bit of that too. I'm not a musicologist, so that's all very amateur. There are two key pieces to this argument, in effect, to my thesis here. One of them is a notion called episodic adventures, which is a phrase that essentially comes from the work of Vincent Turner, the anthropologist. And I'll talk about that in a moment, but I just want to point out that the second one is the performance structure of playing in the band, as I just mentioned. I'll treat each separately. The episodic adventures are three-stage processes. Let me just tell you what the process is, and then I'll tell you what I think the significance of this concept is. The first of these is transition. The second is what Turner called liminality and is defined roughly as being in an alternate space. You can see why I think this complements the first paper, being in an alternate and alternative space out there. And then the third is a transition back or reincorporation or reaggregation is words that Vincent Turner uses. And what's being described here are, in the narrowest sense, are anthropologically studied rites of passage in cultures and in indigenous cultures, initiation rites, things like that. And the concept is brought into our level of existence more in the concept of when you take a risk, when you're trying to do something that you don't normally do, you're not sure what's going to happen, you hope to come back from the risk successfully improved. In the paper, I talk about Frodo sitting in his cave at the beginning of the book, The Hobbit. At the end of the very first section of the book,
Bilbo.
And he's saying, should I in fact leave this comfortable cave and go off on these adventures, what will happen? Nothing ventured, nothing gained. On the other hand, there's a lot to lose. And you, the reader, should decide after you've read the book whether it was wise for me to leave the cave. And it's that sense of episodic adventures that I think suffuses our lives. We're doing this all the time. If you're taking a trip to France, unless you're very fluent and very experienced in things French, you're going to have a transition stage where you read the tour books and you buy a plane ticket and you get nervous about flying, and then you're going to have a whoosh in which you're on a plane for several hours and you get off at the other end and you're in France. And then you're in a liminality stage for a while. But even there are going to be little hints of normalcy. You'll see a McDonald's. That may piss you off if you're in France for sort of the right gastronomic reasons. But on the other hand, it might actually make you feel a little comfortable because you're not doing well negotiating French restaurants. So there's no specific content to this. There's only a sense that you're off doing something and that sooner or later there'll be a transition and that you're coming back. I want to assure you that me appearing at this conference is an episodic adventure. I hope it's episodic. I want to come back from this, but we'll see in a minute. I have more comment. This is not my field. I do this at political science conferences. I have no problem with that sort of thing. I'm way off in a bizarre space here right now. So for me, I don't need to do this. I can stay in my comfortable cave. I've got tenure, you know. But what the hell? The structure of playing in the band, it's my thesis, essentially reflects that process of episodic adventures. And I think it does so in a way that a Grateful Dead concert does. It symbolizes the structure of the concert as well. We buy our ticket, we hang out in a parking lot, blah, 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 blah. We go in, we're off into some outer space for a while, we come back, we have an encore, we're brought back through into a re-aggregation stage, and we're back to more or less being normal. We're altered by the process. We're perhaps better for the process, but we're certainly altered by the process, and we carry on. Playing in the band is the song that I think meta-cantrically portrays that process as well as any other song that's Grateful that I've ever done. And it parallels that notion, its symmetry, the symmetry with that notion of episodic adventures. And that's essentially my point here. I have three arguments to make. One is the musical structure of the self. I think this is the least weighty argument of the three. If you listen to playing in the band without really thinking about it very much, almost all of it is just kind of a little ditty. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then all of a sudden in the middle of this, there's a power riff, ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, which I won't play because you're all experts, you know this as well as I do. And that, to me, is a kind of a symbol of a whoosh transition in what the just the music sounds like. That it's shifted its key, it's shifted the level of intensity. It suggests that we're going someplace different in the song. In the very first published version, I think it's the first published version on the Skeleton and Roses, there is no other place. It just comes right back to da 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 and finishes the song. And that may be why people don't like that record, I don't know. On the studio version Ace, which is roughly the same time, that improvisation starts to be inserted into the middle. It's very short, but it's there. And you can hear, if you listen, the transition from the main theme of the main bridge theme of playing in the band is da 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 da, that little riff. You can hear that at the beginning of the improvisation, and you can hear the band coming back to it at the end of the improvisation. It's a really neat symmetry with the idea of episodic adventures. So there's some stuff in the music itself. I don't think that's the weightiest argument. The fact of the improvisation itself, just because it symbolizes so much of the stuff that Linda was just talking about, we're off into different planes, we're doing this, we're thinking about that. You know, I learned to use the drums to bring me back when I needed to come back. We all have our ways through this, but the point is we're off on a trip someplace while this is going on. It's clearly not the only Grateful Dead song that does this, but it's the one that I think structures itself so nicely around this. And it's not just the improvisation itself, it's the variety in the performance. It's the different ways that they actually use the improvisation in the structure of the song that I found most interesting. So, let me make three arguments about that. Let me figure out how to get that slide back. It worked. Okay. Let me give you three examples of the variety. It's one of these improvisations, which was probably the earliest one, is when the song was a coherent whole piece. They opened the song, they inserted some improvisation on 100 Year Hall. It turns out to be a 9-minute song. On Dick's Picks Volume 1, it turns out to be about a 20-minute song. There's one from 1974 that goes to 46 minutes.
Right.
So it goes on for a while. But the improvisation goes on for a while, and then the song is closed. It comes back. It's a unit. There's nothing else in there except its internal improvisation. A second type is when they open the song, go off into other songs. So on Dick's Picks Number 10, I think there's... It must be most of the second set. There's half a dozen different things. I Know Your Rider, China Cat, and I Know Your Rider are in it. There's a drum thing in it. There's China Doll is in it. And then eventually you hear the bridge, and it comes back into the power riff, da-da-da, and it closes playing in the band. So the second type is when there's other stuff in there. And then the third type is when it opens into the improvisation and doesn't come back. It may come back in a different show, or it may never come back. You'd have to look closely to find out. But it's left open. It's not closed. And I think you know, without making this a really heavy philosophical thing, I think that that parallels the notion of some of our adventures. It's easy for me to imagine that by coming to this caucus, I'm on an episodic adventure that leads in a different direction, and I may not come back to the place that I was. There may be some new, or I might just get lost. there are places out there that one doesn't come back from, and that, I think, is symbolized in a variety of the ways that the song was played. So that's basically the thesis. If you want to read in a little more detail with a few more footnotes and that kind of stuff, please feel free to get the paper. And I wanted to, let me just get my email up just while we're undoing this. If you want to send me for a revised version with the right footnote in it. Thank you.